Are you suffering from back pain? Well, I've got the thing just for you. 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com. Over 30 million Americans are suffering with back pain at this very moment. The vast majority of these cases are either caused or exacerbated by common lifestyle factors. Many of the same factors may be causing you pain right now. Join board-certified physician Andrew Kirshner as he guides you through the parts of your life where these problems occur and gives you simple, safe, and effective solutions for these common daily pitfalls. In this fun and informative book, you will learn how to identify the aspects of your life which may be causing you pain, how to create a back-friendly environment, how you can improve your pain by improving your sleep, ways to make a pain-free commute, how you can perform daily activities without making your pain worse, and much more. Andrew Kirshner is so well respected in the field of back pain relief. He has, you know, famous clients such as DJ Jazzy Jeff. He has done many talks and lectures at universities in the UK. He has appeared on QVC demonstrating back pain relief products, and that is because he is an expert in his field and people trust him. Also, check out the 5-star reviews on Amazon.com. This is the book that you need if you suffer from back pain. That's 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com in paperback. Check the link below the show for more information. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Turnchuckle. Yay! I hear you all shout. I am Pablo and without me today is Foxy. It's kind of like when the Road Dog would come out without Billy Gunn but still do the whole spiel. But I'm not clever or creative enough to really have a catchphrase yet. Suggest one. What should my catchphrase be? Then I can market it and sell t-shirts, etc. and become a millionaire. Today's guest is Austin Idol, the Universal Heartthrob. Now, because it is just me, we're going to get straight into it after a little bit of business. First, I want to thank everyone who has listened to the relaunch of Turnchuckle on BBG Wrestling. The numbers have been great. I do also want to thank Andrew Kirshner, 15 Surefire Tips for Relieving Back Pain. He is the sponsor at the start of the show. He's a real sponsor. Check the link below the show. If you have everyday back problems, please check him out because your support of his book continues to help support the show, so we massively, massively appreciate it. And obviously thanks to BBG for giving us the platform to reach a wide audience of lovely, lovely, diverse wrestling fans. Now, as is shown by the guests that we've had so far, we're possibly the only podcast ever that has had both Ahmed Johnson and Austin Idol. Let's see, we're working through the A's, you see. So Abe Knuckleball Schwartz will, I'm sure, be coming up soon. So yes, you can find Turnchuckle on the Instagram, and I post various bits of rare wrestling memorabilia from a collection and not so rare wrestling memorabilia, but I talk about it in great length and hopefully don't bore the tits off you. But you know, it entertains me if nothing else. And also check out Grapple Arcade on Twitter. See, I don't have a script, you see. I just make it up as I go along. I'm One Take Pablo, that's what they call me. That's what no one calls me. That's what I call myself. So yes, check out Grapple Arcade on Twitter. That is Foxy's main hub of operations, and he's currently running a competition. Now, if you listened to last week's episode of Hands Off the Merchandise, you'll be aware that Foxy and Grapple Arcade in particular are running a competition where you can win some really amazing signed Lucha promotional stuff for the new figure line from Boss Fight Studio in collaboration with Mass Republic, the Lucha Libre wrestling figure line. These figures are incredible, and they launch next year, and you should definitely check them out. And also check out the Hands Off the Merchandise show. Next week's Hands Off the Merchandise show will be with Chris DePetrillo of Figures Toy Company. We're interviewing heads of toy companies. I mean, it's insane. I'm just, you know, mind is completely blown constantly that we're able to do such ridiculous things. Check out previous episodes of Tone Chuckle on SoundCloud and BBG Wrestling. We have interviewed so far guys like Sid, Ahmed Johnson, and Kevin Sullivan, Brian Pillman Jr., and there is a ton more to come. Same with Hands Off the Merchandise, various non-wrestler wrestling personalities and collectors, etc. And that's also going to be an opportunity for myself and Foxy and the other guys of BBG to get nerdy and talk long form about different subjects as well, because hopefully, you know, our nerdiness will appeal. I think it will, because we can go on at great length. We almost had a 1 hour conversation once about Crush and his various characters. So if you're into that kind of shit, then this is the podcast for you. So yes, I think that's all of the admin out the way. Without further ado, this is the Universal Heartthrob, Austin Idol. The word legend gets thrown about a lot, but I have with me a man who transcends the word legend. He has been credited with having an influence on names like Hulk Hogan and The Rock. He is arguably Jerry Lawler's greatest opponent, and he is set to make his video game debut. He is the Universal Heartthrob, Austin Idol. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and right here up front, I want to emphatically say that I'm denying all of the accusations and allegations. Totally false. We have no documentation. I've hired a team of very high-profile attorneys that are in my corner, so I'm just pleading the fifth right from the get-go, Paul.
Yeah, it depends on depending on whose opinion, whether you want to take credit or blame for Hulk Hogan's a completely different thing altogether, you know.
I get blamed for everything, man.
So where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Mars. I was the first man on Mars, and I'm very proud of that. I put the American flag. Now, if I'd have had one of yours, I'd put it on Mars as well. But I'm from Greenville, South Carolina.
Ah, so I was going to say, yeah, Mars, only a five-hour time difference from Mars to the UK. But five-hour time difference, but we don't know what week you're in and what week I'm in or what month or anything like that. So, we'll leave it up to the listener's imagination.
Yeah, I've got one, thank God.
So, yeah, we'll get straight into the video game Retro Mania from RetroSoft Studios. Does it blow your mind that you're going to be in a video game?
Well, you know, my mind was blown a long time ago.
The 70, 70s were a crazy time.
There wasn't anything left to blow, but it's very, very cool that they asked me to be part of it, and I'm excited about it, and I think it's going to be great. And these guys have a great history, as well as yourself, and I think it's just going to be a really cool, fun game for all our international, global gamers out there. I'm looking forward to it, totally looking forward to it, stoked about it.
What do you think has led to, because your name has always been sort of around, even when you haven't been completely active in wrestling. Do you think it was something like Jim Cornette's podcast that you appeared on, which led to you launching your own podcast, which really made your name sort of known to a new generation of fans?
You talk about my existing podcast, the one prior with Brian Last.
Yeah, the one that led straight right from Jim Cornette's appearance. Because that was your first podcast venture, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if the podcast, you know, podcasts, obviously, they help with relevancy. And but, I mean, I've got a decent footprint in professional wrestling. I mean,
absolutely.
I've done some unusual things, and I've got a pretty good history there, you know. So, but then again, you know, out of sight, out of mind, or absence makes the heart grow fonder. So it's one or the other. I don't know, but I'm enjoying doing my new podcast. It's very motivational, inspirational, hopefully.
Yeah, I know that you moved into motivational speaking as well. What made you want to do that? Was that just kind of learn from your wild history, I guess? And
oh, Paul, I've done so many things. I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, really, I went from I went from wrestling. And I got, and you know, my little story, and that's what it is. It's a little story. But I've reached a point in professional wrestling where I've really kind of burned out. You know, I hit the wall like a marathon runner.
Yeah.
But they go through the wall, and I elected not to go through the wall. So I hit the wall, and it was years and years and years ago. And I could have stayed in wrestling for much longer and done extremely well, but I just burned out, tired. So, I hung it up and didn't do anything for a while and kind of backed into real estate. I backed into it. I wasn't even looking for it. But I did. I backed into it and just kind of started playing around with it a little bit and developed a niche. I really developed a very cool niche without reading books or looking at videos. And it led to 15 years of buying and selling real estate in Florida.
How much of your showmanship as Austin Idol translated into your career as a real estate salesman?
You know, I don't think it did. I mean, as far as Austin Idol, I really don't think that came into play. But the salesmanship of being in professional wrestling, that was definitely beneficial because we're all selling something. And either you know how to do it or you don't know how to do it, and you know how to communicate with people or you don't. But it was that salesmanship that I had. But nevertheless, you still have to know what you're doing. Even if you're a great salesperson, you have to know what you're doing. So I developed a niche, and it was a very cool thing. And over a period of time, and I wasn't a licensed agent because you would have to take a test. And you know, I could probably pass a blood test. But a written test, I don't know, man. But, you know, so I wasn't a licensed agent. I was a buyer and a seller, and that's what I did for 15 years. And, I'd say, Paul, realistically, over that length of time, probably bought and sold 500 or so properties.
That's amazing. So what happened, if you don't mind me asking, did the market sort of fall through the floor, or did you miss wrestling in particular, or did you miss just being in front of an audience in particular?
I was living the dream. I mean, with real estate, I was living the dream. I really was. It was great. My own boss set my own schedule, my own time, and I had more free time than you could imagine just because the way I had it structured. But it was in 2006, which was really the top of the market. And how I would do things, of course, I had my primary residence, and then I always had two, maybe three properties on the market for sale. And my whole concept was, business model was, always leave something on the table for the next buyer. Make sure it was a good deal for them. So in other words, I had to make sure I had a good deal going in, because you make the money going in. But in 2006, real estate values were way up, sky high, and I had two or three properties out there that should really have been getting a lot of attention, but they were really slow. I mean, I thought, something's weird here. I didn't know what it was, but I said, something's really weird here, because these properties ought to be getting, you know, more attention and attracting potential buyers. I mean, they did eventually sell, but when that happened, I didn't know what it was, but I thought, you know, something is wrong. I don't know what it is, but I'm getting out while the getting's good.
Yeah.
Sold my property, sold my main dwelling house, and shut it down, basically shut it down. And sure enough, 2008, the world collapses.
Yeah, did you see anyone personally suffer because of that, like who didn't get out in time, sort of thing?
Did I know anybody who did not?
Yeah.
Oh, are you kidding? I mean, careers and, you know, financial situation totally destroyed. I mean, oh yeah, there's still people, I mean, are still reeling from it. I mean, just reeling from it, because so many people are invested in real estate. They had everything tied up in real estate, and once the market collapsed, properties weren't worth anything. Nobody wanted to buy them. And so people just let them go. You know, they just mailed their keys back into their lender, said, I'm done, I'm out.
Oh, wow.
And then the credit shot. bankruptcies, you know, et cetera. So you try to go through all that to repair it. I mean, tough, tough, tough. So, yeah, I mean, I know people to this day, they still haven't recovered.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's the same over here as well that, you know, we suffered just as badly because of the financial crash and, you know, we could get into politics, but we won't.
Because we can't change it.
that is very true. It's kind of weird. Around 2006, with WWE in particular, because they owned all the footage from all the territories. I mean, they didn't own the Memphis footage, but they owned just about everything else. They kind of started to launch kind of like a Legends resurgence with action figures, all that kind of thing. Did you sort of see this kind of renewed interest in the past around that time? And I mean, it's something that has continued to this day. And I mean, the nostalgia is probably as big as ever. Not that you're nostalgic either in some ways, because you're still very much active, but did you see that there was like a renewed interest in what you had done?
Well, I missed out on a lot of that, Paul. I mean, I really missed out on a lot of merchandising and all of that because when I bailed, when I got out, but I knew it. I mean, I did know it. I mean, I knew I was walking away from potentially a lot of money. I mean, I really did. But, you know, my whole thing is that if your inner voice is screaming at you, you might want to pay attention to it, because typically when we don't, we ignore it, bang, it bites us.
Yeah.
So I missed out on a lot of the merchandising, although, you know, I had my real estate and I do other things. I mean, I went from real estate, I got out before the crash, into the restaurant business.
Business. I saw the really cool Christmas video that you did, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas, but then you turned heel on everyone.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you got to do those things, you know. But and you know, speaking of that, that was a very cool thing to be. And we're still very, very friendly. I mean, extremely friendly. Billy Corgan, Smashing Pumpkins, Rock Icon. You know, I think Billy's still over in Europe. And David Lagana, his partner. So I saw David just recently, but and it was a real kick to be associated with those guys and with the NWA. I mean, really, really kick. And Nick Aldis being his manager when he first won the belt. You know, so that relationship is still strong, and those are great guys. And you know, I mean, it's pretty amazing that that Billy Corgan, he took that NWA brand, he bought it outright, he owns it outright, and he's definitely pumped some fresh air into that thing, you know. And it's cool because of the history of it. I mean, the history of it is just, it's amazing.
Yeah, well, I was going to say as well, like, because I can imagine you're pretty selective on what you decide to do. And how you decide to keep the Austin Idol name out there as well. So, in your mind, would the NWA name not have been enough to drag you back in? Would it have had to have been Billy Corgan's involvement, the whole professional presentation of the NWA, instead of kind of it being how it was over the past 20 years, where it kind of it became not really acknowledged as much anymore, you know, until it's had this like resurgence? And is that kind of what brought you back in?
You know, well, it was an opportunity. That's what it was. It was just an opportunity that kind of came out of nowhere. And I just thought, this is really cool. Very cool, because, you know, I mean, I was in and around with NWA forever and ever and ever. And with that history, and then the opportunity, it really kind of came out of nowhere. It was a no-brainer. I mean, it was truly a no-brainer. And I see some really big things happening with them anyway. I'm sure of it. I don't know what they're planning, but I'm sure.
Yeah, the first time I ever heard your name, it was on a Jim Cornette shoot interview, and he was talking about you very positively. And the first time I ever heard the line, he could talk them into the building, was in relation to your good self. So I immediately had to find Austin Idol promos, and I was just like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, you know, it just felt like you believed that you were Austin Idol. And, you know, when you believe what you're selling, then everyone else is going to believe it as well.
we all have to believe. That's the bottom line. We all have to believe. I mean, if you don't believe in what you're doing, it's over. You shouldn't be doing it. Do find something else to do. But and, you know, back in that day, of course, everything, as you well know, I mean, they give you something to read. And it takes away all the creativity from talent, you know, to be able to... It's improvisation is what it is, and be able to think on your feet. And when that red light comes on, I mean, it's on you. And either you're going to deliver the goods or you're not. I mean, truly. So back in that day, that's how you put fannies in the seats.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's how you did it, you know. And of course, television ratings. But, I mean, now, gosh, I mean, I understand it. And, you know, everything changes and people change. I dig all that. I mean, but sometimes things change not for the better. And when you strip that opportunity for someone to actually say what they want to say, you know, it just changes the whole dynamic. So, I mean, I'm glad that I was able to be, you know, hey, lights on, Ivan.
Yeah.
Wrestling. Well, Jerry Lawler, you're wrestling, you know, whoever, Mark Lewin, Kevin Sullivan, I'd be with the Butcher, you know, Stan Hansen, that brutal individual.
how far in advance did you prepare, like, I know a lot of promos were kind of like, here's a bullet point, you know, sell the match sort of thing. Did you have, like, catchphrases in mind, or did you kind of stumble across them, kind of in the way that Arn Anderson stumbled across the Four Horsemen line? Like, were there ever any things like that kind of have stuck with you throughout your career just by accident?
Well, it was never... I mean, as far as... Are we talking about doing promos?
Mm.
Yeah, no. For me, no prep. I mean, not really, no prep. I mean... The thing of it is, if you're being featured, you know, if you're a featured talent, then you're going to be involved with somebody, you know, you're wrestling somebody. You better have, if you're going to be featured, you should be in some type of a feud. So if you've got a feud, I mean, it's really second nature. I mean, you just get after it. I can remember, this is a true story, Paul, back in the day in Atlanta with TBS, Kevin Sullivan and I had a thing going. I mean, it was so hot that television stations from around the territory, because it was your territories then, you know, like Augusta, Georgia, Macon, Georgia, I mean, just where Columbus, Georgia, all those, because it was a territory, obviously.
Yeah.
They were calling into the wrestling office there in Atlanta, telling administration, tell those guys to cool it, because people were calling into the station, said, hey man, this is out of control, it's out of control. But we had a thing going that was so powerful and so strong, and they told us, and instead of us backing off, we took it to the next level.
Was this at the height of Kevin Sullivan's cult deal as well?
The height of his what deal?
His cult leader sort of...
No, this is pre-cult.
All right.
Yeah, I met Sullivan really for the first time. It was somewhere in... it was in Alabama somewhere. And I had an opportunity to go up to Atlanta to just do the TV. That's all it was. You just get, come up and do a TV for us, you know? So I did. And... they liked it. They liked Austin Idol. They liked the promo. They liked it. And I started kind of going back and forth a little bit from Alabama. And it was great exposure because that was the place to be. I mean, TBS was the place to be because that was like as close as you're going to get to national television. I mean, so yeah. It was a superstation. You know, it was a big deal. And Sullivan was... in Alabama, and finally I got the idea, look, why don't you just come on up, Idol, and just come on into the territory, just work Georgia Championship Wrestling. So it was a good opportunity to have all that exposure. I went, and when I got there, I started campaigning for Kevin Sullivan to bring him in. Bring this Kevin Sullivan guy in, you know, he's got talent. This guy's got talent. And, young, good-looking kid, you know. and like myself at the time, but they didn't want him in. They didn't want Sullivan in. They didn't want him in. But I stayed on Ole Anderson, who was the actual booker, you know, talent coordinator. And finally, he just gave in, and he said, "Okay, we'll bring him up."
What? So, why wouldn't they bring him in? Was it his size, or was it his?
Yes,
right.
Small.
Yeah.
Too small.
Was he brought in as a heel then? Because I can't imagine Kevin Sullivan ever as a babyface.
Oh, he was great. He was great because prior to him actually coming in, Kevin and I worked this deal out, and I give him a lot of credit for it. And I don't like doing that, giving Sullivan credit for anything. Just don't like it, you know. But and we're still very good friends. We talk every week. But he was sending interviews, and they were basically, "Idol, you owe me. You know what you did." I mean, they were short and sweet interviews. "Austin Idol, you owe me. You know what you did." And he sent these in. They're probably 30-second promos, probably for a month. So obviously, Gordon Soley said, "Well, what's this guy? What did you do to this guy?" And my response was, "I don't even know who this guy is. Who's Kevin Sullivan? I've never heard of him." And so the mystery and the interest started building because people started saying, "Yeah, I think this Idol's lying. I think he did do something." In the meantime, Sullivan sending them in, "You owe me, Idol. You owe me, Idol, and you're going to pay. You're going to pay." So one day, I can remember one day, it was yesterday, Gordon Soley asked, "Okay, all right, what's going on with Sullivan?" And I said, "You know something, Gordon? Now I remember Kevin Sullivan. I was at the airport one day, and I needed a sky cap. And yeah, I recognize him now. Yeah, he came over and grabbed my bags. And he grabbed my bags, took my bags up to the gate. And that was my deal, you know what I mean? But finally, when he came in, we just kind of kicked it off, and it caught fire. I mean, it caught fire. It was a bitter, bitter feud. I mean, it was like a hatred. It was total hatred. And people, you know, I would get on his family. You know, so his daddy was a drunk, and Sullivan had to pick his daddy up out of the gutter every morning going to school as a little boy. You know, called his mama. You know, he didn't even know who his daddy, who his mama was. So his sisters had her name and phone number and at a truck stop from Boston to Bangkok. Oh, man, I got up again. I mean, I just destroyed him and his family. It got very hot. It got very hot.
But and it got hot, but at the same time, the way you're explaining the whole angle as well, it's so simple because it's based on just a pure hatred, a believable hatred. And I think that, you know, and don't get me wrong, I think, you know, there's so much good stuff in wrestling at the moment, but it's kind of hard to believe hatred between two people without kind of, I guess, breaking down the fourth wall and kind of breaking kayfabe a little bit. And that kind of has to happen now to get the fans to believe. Like, where do you kind of stand on that?
Now?
Clint? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, once the genie's out of the bottle, you can't put it back in. I mean, you know, it's firing the bullet, and you're firing the gun, the bullet's out. So, now, is it possible? Is it possible to do something to change to a certain degree? I mean, you're not gonna change it completely. It's not gonna happen. But could something be done to create a renewed interest in professional wrestling, where a fan would say, "Wait a minute, Paul." Now, okay, I know a lot of that stuff is, but you know, I think there's something to that.
It's kind of from a fan's, like purely a fan's point of view. When there is a situation that happens, like when, you know, I don't know if you're familiar, it's something like when Edge slept with Matt Hardy's girlfriend in real life, and they kind of brought it into a wrestling angle and all that kind of thing. it can kind of be done, and belief can be sort of, what's the word, kind of brought into it from a fan's point of view, but then it's kind of, okay, we believe that there is something there, but then it kind of almost reinforces that everything else definitely isn't real, if you know what I mean. But then if they kind of try to make everything realistic like that, then no one will believe that either, because not everything could be really real. Otherwise, everyone would just be killing each other every week, if you know what I mean. Is that kind of...
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And you're right on point. But I think there's a few things that could be done to... that could really be cool in be very, very cool, and just kind of make people cock their heads a little bit and say, wait a minute. Now, Vince could never do that because he's a publicly owned company. You know, he has to answer. He's the chairman, of course. He's the last word, but he still has to answer to his board. You know, he has stockholders he has to answer to. But with AEW, with Tony Khan and Cody Rhodes and, you know, the Bucks, they're privately held. They have a lot of leeway, a lot of leeway. They don't have to answer to anybody. I mean, they're going to be on TBS in Atlanta in the fall. We'll start that, which I think that's phenomenal. I mean, it's great. I mean, this business really finally... there's somebody else out there that matters, you know, so it's great. Competition's a great thing. So Vince he's got legitimate competition here. And I think, these guys are creative enough. And, Cody, he's got the Dusty Rhodes gene.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a feeling they're gonna do some things to wake up the wrestling industry, and they're already doing it. So I'm looking forward to them being on TV. I really am. I think it's just fantastic.
I think so. So I mean, AEW is coming to the UK on a not on cable, kind of on a I don't know what you would call it in America. Kind of like we call it terrestrial, sort of a channel that's available everywhere for free, basically. And you know the potential for the audience is going to be huge, and they're actually going to be more accessible in different homes than WWE will be with their current deal in the UK, which is very interesting. I think it'll draw a lot of people back into wrestling who miss there being an alternative on a major scale, and the pay-per-view that. Double or Nothing was a success here, and it's definitely opened a lot of eyes, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to freshen up the industry. It's been desperate for that for ever and ever and ever. I mean, it really has been desperate, because WWE has monopolized the industry, and now it's they're shaking things up. You know, that's a cool thing. And, you can see the talent that's going over there. And matter of fact, my last podcast I just did yesterday. I mean, if you had a choice, I mean, I would rather be with the AEW, even if it was for less money, but more life, instead of the grind. You know, I mean, you hear these stories about the guys who've done the grind. I mean, there's a few of the elites, that... don't have that grind, obviously, like Brock, plenty of them just grinding it out. You got no time. Your life is just flying by. And over here with Tony Khan, I mean, they're going to let guys have a life. They're going to give them a more of a relaxed schedule and still make great money. So
I think that's the best thing AEW can do, if it changes the industry from that perspective, in terms of giving wrestlers time off, maybe even having some kind of pension plan or anything like that. You know, I think having an alternative will sort of create leverage, I would say, within the workers to, hopefully... have a better life after wrestling as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have the money. I mean, the money is not a problem. I mean, take care of the people who you're pulling the plow. If you get whoever the, if you, you have mule pulling the plow, take care of them.
Yeah.
Don't just don't whip them. And, you know, beat them and just.
Was that something that you valued when you wrestled? You know, back then, that you could go around to different territories and you could have the time off when you needed it and stuff like that, and it wouldn't hurt your name, because, you know, there were the magazines that could do interviews and stuff like that. You know, did you, would you say you very much valued that you were able to have your own life? And you, would you, I mean, would it be fair to say that you didn't live for wrestling back then, but it was a passion?
Well, here's the thing. I definitely did my share of the grind. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, I did it. And matter of fact, what really kind of drove me out a little bit was I was in the Mid-Atlantic, where I'm residing now. I'm living in the Mid-Atlantic area, but they just worked us to death. I mean, 7 days a week. Oh, you know, I think there was a couple of days out of the seven that I know for a fact on Sunday we wrestled twice, and Wednesday twice. So you add it up in 7 days. What is that? I mean, you know, it's too much. It was too much, is what it was. So I mean, that's where I really hit the wall, and I said, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I'm going to go somewhere else where I can have a little bit of a life.
Yeah.
And, but I ended up eventually. It was a great decision because I ended up with the Memphis territory with Jerry Lawler, and my deal was, it was a part-time deal. So, I mean, I was living in Florida. I would fly out of Florida at 5 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, which was 4 o'clock there, Central time. They were on Central. So that gave me plenty of time, and it was a direct flight, to fly right into Memphis. I would still be there, you know, early enough. And wrestle Monday night. Next day, I would fly to Louisville, Kentucky. So no car, you know, not behind that wheel, not on the road.
Yeah.
And then on a Wednesday, I would ride over with now dig this, Paul. I would ride over with Jimmy Cornette and his mom. His mom. Yeah.
Mama Cornette. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Mama was driving. Corny was in the front, just soaking anything and everything in with Jimmy Valiant and myself in the back seat. It was, but those were humble beginnings, early beginnings for Jimmy Cornette. You know, who turned out phenomenal talent. You know, so yeah, I would ride with them. It was like 90 miles, 100 miles to Evansville, Indiana. Wrestle there, fly back to Florida Thursday morning on the early flight. And so then I would be off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I had 4 days off. And I did that on and off for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. So with back then, in terms of merchandising, was it even considered? Like, did you create your own merchandise? Or, like, how did it work? If you were on the cover of the program or whatever, did you get, like, was there more incentive in that sort of thing? Or?
Well, they paid me good there in Memphis. They paid me real good, and I did get some merchandising. But most of the time, Memphis, I was a bad guy. You know, I was a bad guy, so the merch would have been somewhat questionable. But I mean, I made good money there. You know, and the lifestyle, the schedule was so good. I didn't really squawk about that. But when I was in the Alabama territory, Birmingham, Pensacola, Mobile, Alabama, I can't remember this, Montgomery, Alabama. I was the first one, and that was part of my deal, to be able to sell merchandise.
What did you have?
Oh, man, I had it all. I had it all. I mean, I had dog tags. I had T-shirts, of course, pictures. I even, at one point, I was selling women's lingerie.
Yep. With your name on it? Or
with a heart, like, I heart Austin.
Brilliant.
So I, with the red heart, Austin. I mean, I sold everything you could possibly, bumper stickers. I mean, I can't even begin to think of it, but just, and I did that for a long time down there, and that was cash money.
Yeah. Did any of the women ever throw the panties back in your face.
No, but they're husbands. Boyfriends. They weren't happy about it. And oh, where'd you get those, honey? At the wrestling matches.
It's where you get your heat. Like, when... when, because I heard the story about when, like, Bill Watts brought in the Rock and Roll Express, Steve Kern, Stan Lane, Terry Taylor, there was a boost in attendance figures, and that was largely due to women who wanted to go and see these good-looking baby faces. So that was that always kind of like a boost in attendance when Austin Idol would come to a territory?
You know, you have to market to everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you really do. I mean, if you're selling whatever you're selling, you want to get everybody involved. I mean, that increases your chances for revenue, right? So you got to get everybody involved. But Bill was smart. I mean, you got to give Bill Watts a lot of credit. I mean, yeah, those guys were on fire there, man. They were, and that was a grind. And I mean, Cornette did. Oh, it's been quite a while. When I was doing my first podcast, that I had Corny on as a guest, and we talked about that grind. And man, oh man, it was. They were making great money though. They were making great money, but they were really, really grinding it out there with in the Watts territory.
It seemed like with the Watts territory in particular that if you were a heel and you didn't cause a riot, then you weren't really doing your job properly. Because, okay, you would get a riot and you would nearly get killed every night, but it would sell out every night as well because they'd want to see you get killed from the Rock and Roll Express or from whoever.
Well, Bill Watts was... you knew who was in charge. I mean, and he that was his legend. I mean, Watts had a legend, and I mean, a tough one. You know, screamer, yeller. You know, get on to in front of everybody. And matter of fact, when I was in Georgia, and I've told this story, when I was in Georgia wrestling, they switched bookers, and they brought Bill Watts in. And now when I knew Watts was coming in, I automatically said, "Well, you're done. You're done because." He's not going to like you, and it's not going to work, and, you know, you might as well start thinking about where you're going next. And Watts came in, and he had a big group meeting, and he made it known that I'm the boss. You're going to do what I tell you to do. He was the first one there in Georgia to institute late fines. If you're late for the building, you're going to be fined, you know, three times, you're out. He came in. He came in with guns blazing, you know. So, but at the end of the meeting, he said, "If anybody has anything they want to say to me, you know, step right up. You know, I'll be in my office." And I said, "Well, I'm going in." I think I was the only one that went in. Everybody else, I believe, was probably pretty much intimidated because he was a big, intimidating guy.
Yeah.
So.
Still is. That's the thing. He's still
here. Still is. Smart guy. Bill's smart guy. So I went into his office and I said, "Bill, listen, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. And I just want you to know I want to make as much money for you and as much money for myself as possible. And that's if you have plans for me." And I said, "And if you do have plans for me, there's only one thing I ask you. Don't yell at me. Don't scream at me. Don't humiliate or degrade me in front of the boys. I said, if you have something constructive to say, you want to tell me something, pull me off to the side. You know, but not in front of the boys because I can't do that."
Yeah.
And he respected it. And, you know, he gave me opportunities there in Georgia. I would have bet the farm. He would have never done that for me, and he did. And he aligned me with the current champion at the time, Harley Race, the Tommy Rich thing. You know, I mean, gosh, I think I was pretty much involved with anybody there for quite a while.
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer. I was out of interest. When you worked at Memphis, were there noticeable differences? Because I know that Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett would take turns running the territory. So depending on who was running it at the time, were there noticeable differences in how you were used or how the company was run?
Oh, I only worked for one guy. That was Lawler.
Right, okay. Did they have their own favourites then, I guess?
Say it again, please.
Did Lawler and Jarrett have their own favourites who they preferred to use when they were running the territory?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I knew that in order for... The reason I lasted so long in Memphis in that area was that I was able to really have a lot of input about Austin Idol.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lawler was a very good business person, so he didn't have that big ego. Like, it had to be his idea. He was just the opposite. I mean, if you had an idea, you know, I mean, which I had him every week. I mean, I would come in on Monday night.
Yeah.
Already had an idea, because whatever I wanted to do something on Monday to come back the following Monday. And if you're not planning and had a really good strategy in place, well, you're not going to succeed. And I mean, I really did. I had a lot of input there, and Lawler, he was very open to me, and they weren't all my ideas, for sure, because Jerry's a smart guy.
Yeah.
But he was very receptive to me, very receptive, and that's really what that's how I lasted so long. See, that would have never happened with Jerry Jarrett.
Right. Okay.
That would have never happened, and given Jerry Jarrett credit, he's a really smart guy. I mean, very, very smart guy, very creative. But just wouldn't have happened. And plus, you know, if you're going to be in that area, there's only one person you want to wrestle. That's Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
And there's nobody else.
Absolutely. So, you were there after the Andy Kaufman thing, weren't
you?
Oh, so where were you wrestling at that point? Because you had a thing in the WWF as well, which I kind of wanted to ask you about. So you weren't around for any of the Andy Kaufman storyline?
No, I missed out on the Kaufman thing. I missed out on it. I think I did. I mean, I was there. Oh, I think I was there maybe a couple of times when Andy was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, I met Andy, you know. I mean, it's just a human being, that's all, you know. It doesn't make any difference if you're a big dealer or not. You're all the same. But I met Andy a couple of times, and interesting guy. I mean, he didn't have much to say.
Right. As a big Andy Kaufman fan, so I kind of wanted to ask you about that.
Paul, let me say something about that, because the thing about Andy Kaufman, you know, you see him in his character, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see him in his character. That was really, I mean... When you looked at Andy, it looked like there just wasn't anybody home. But you know, how smart he was, you know, and he's really super smart. But you look at his eyes, it's almost like, you know, I'm just there's nobody home.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to him a little bit, but he was just a very quiet guy. A very, very quiet guy, but good guy.
Yeah, very respectful from, like, every thing that I've heard as well. Respect. Like, it would be easy as a celebrity to come in and just feel that you're bigger than, you know, wrestling or whatever. Yeah, but obviously, you know, again, very respectful and just not necessarily liked by everyone, but I think he knew how to kind of... you know, almost work everyone, I guess. You know, he is kind of the ultimate worker in some ways, because some people still think he's alive, which, you know...
Wait, you mean he isn't? you just killed my whole deal, man. Oh, man.
No.
Don't tell me Andy Kaufman's dead, please. Now, next thing you're going to say, Elvis is dead.
Can't be proven. No, Easter Bunny's still alive. We're fine. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but your stint in the WWF with Lou Albano as your manager, where were you brought from for that? Were you in Texas beforehand or in Mid-Atlantic or...?
Australia, mate.
Right, okay. So who brought you in? Like, who was...
I was in Aussie. I was in Aussie as a young punk kid, and Jim Barnett.
I was gonna say Barnett. Yeah, he must have without being too stereotypical, might have liked the look of you to bring you in.
Well, I got really Gary Hart was responsible for bringing me over there. I was in Charlotte at the time as a rookie, and I was doing really good actually as a rookie in Charlotte. Uh-huh. And Gary Hart was on his way out. He was going to Aussie. He said to me, "Hey, would you have any interest in going to Australia?" He said, "I think you and Bulldog Brower would make wrestling each other really, really be good." And he said, "This is 1972. Yeah, he says, I believe I can get you $1,000 a week. They pay your taxes and you fly everywhere. It's just great. And you'll love Australia." I said, "Gary, yeah, I mean, if you can get me that deal," well, he got it for me, and I went to Aussie. So anyway, that was incredible. I mean, really, that's one of the best times in my life, period, much less the wrestling industry. But nevertheless, I was there, and then Barnett sold the business to Eddie Graham and Buddy Fuller, and there was a transition, obviously. And Barnett asked me, he said, "Listen, you know, sold, would you do me a favor and come back to help them transition?" And I said, "Absolutely." I mean, you know, I owed him that. So I did. And after about a couple of weeks, really, I knew this place ain't going to make it. You cannot. Well, they're trying to follow, I mean, top-tier talent. I mean, Mark Bloom, Curtis Iaquea, King Curtis, Spiros Arion, Tiger, Jeet Singh, Bulldog Brower, Gary Hart, Luke Bernard, I mean, Mario Milano, I mean, just loaded talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the elite place to be, and I was a lucky kid to be there. But I came back for the transition after a couple of weeks on the roosting table, and the Barnett said to me, he said, "You know, here's my number in the event you need to contact me about anything." And he was gone, you know. He said, "I'll be at the Surfrider Hotel in Hawaii for a while." I came back, I saw the thing, I said, "Well, this ain't gonna make it. I gotta think of something." So I said, "Well, I've got Barnett's number." I called him. I said, "Jim, this place is going down fast, and I gotta get out of here. And I wanted to give you the courtesy of knowing that I'm leaving here. I'm going to give him a 2-week notice and leave." He says, "Where are you going to go?" I said, "I have no idea. Where do you want to go? And if it happened this fast, where do you want to go?" I said, "New York." He said, "I'll call Vince."
Wow. Okay.
He said, "I'll call Vince. Call me in," I think it was like 3 days. "Call me in 3 days at a certain time or whatever." I called him. He says, "You're booked."
And Vince Senior obviously knew about you. And or was it a kind of a heavy recommendation from Barnett?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And my last legitimate name is McCord McMahon. You got that Irish thing going on, you know.
Yeah.
So I went there, I said to Barnett, I said, "But I want to be a bad guy. I want to wrestle as a bad guy. You know, I'd never done that before." So they figured that out. So when I went in there for the first television tapings, you know, I was Mike McCord. And after probably, I did like 2 different television taping sessions, which lasted totally 6 weeks. You're in and you're out, bang, then you go up full time. And I was up there just by myself, not very long, when Vince called me off to the side and said, "Look, I'm going to put you with Lou Albano and start making you some money."
So how quickly did you end up in... Was it a program with Pedro as champion, or was it just a couple of one-off matches?
Yeah, it was just a few matches with Pedro. But Vince told me that from the jump. He said, "Look, I'm going to give you some really good, you know, events all around." He said, "Not this time, but when you come back the next time, you're going to get it all." I mean, that's exactly what he said. "You're going to get it all." So in some, but the one who was hot, I mean, the hot one was Jay Strongbow.
Yeah.
He was so hot. It was unbelievable. He carried the territory because Pedro only worked a few days a month. So Jay Strongbow carried the territory. And I wrestled Strongbow a lot. Singles and tag matches and six mans and
I always get the feeling that because people don't realize, from my point of view, that people kind of forget how like popular Jay Strongbow was in that territory, because people think of Bruno and Pedro, and you know Gorilla Monsoon and you know names like that. But Jay Strongbow, was he kind of easy to work with in the sense that all he had to do was kind of shake his head and start the war dance, and the crowd would go insane.
He was the easiest of all time. I mean, you know, you're in the ring and you're waiting for him, and you hear the bells jingling on his, on his moccasin boots, you know. And then as soon as you hear those bells, people would go berserk. And the big headdress, you know. I mean, it's like they'd go berserk. And as soon as he would get in the ring, I mean, he would be in attack mode and I would be in run mode.
it was chasing.
You know, I would run. And then finally, you know, when the time was right, and you get the upper hand on this guy, those people would come unglued.
Yeah.
Were
you the talker that you would become? Because I can't imagine you needing Captain Lou. But obviously, Captain Lou, a heat-seeking missile, you know. So that immediately makes you like an amazing bad guy just because of your connection with Captain Lou. But did you feel that you needed him as well at that time?
He was. I mean, you talk about a lucky break. That was. I would say that was probably my luckiest break in wrestling. And the reason is that Lou Albano was such a master. I mean, he was a brilliant guy, and to be around him and listening to him do those promos that he did, he was so smart and so quick. And having him next to me, I'm soaking it all in like a sponge, you know. And he had that whole thing, you know. So me as being a young kid, that was what a mentor he was. And it was the teacher and the student.
Yeah.
You know, it was the teacher and the student. And really, that's when I really learned, like, man, you can really, when it's your time and you finally gain your confidence in front of a camera, when it's time to cut a promo, this guy's all over the place. I mean, he just all over the place. I mean, it's like, it's just tremendous.
I'd say I've never had the opportunity to see any of that. I can, from just like initial impressions, I would have imagined you with the Wizard or with Freddie Blassie, just because I can imagine that look as a package sort of thing. So you and Captain Lou must have on camera just seemed like complete opposites, but it kind of worked, I'm guessing.
Oh, it worked perfectly, you know. And the more, and then finally, you know, Lou was the mouthpiece there for a while.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, I started getting my little bit of my promo in, and the more I would get it out there, the better I got. And the more confidence I got, you know. And then pretty much, you know, I really got, I mean, at the end, by the time I left there, I was cutting a pretty good promo. I mean, I was, the people I was around, it was just amazing, you know. I mean, just to have that opportunity to listen, learn, you know, and remember.
One thing that I do love, before we wrap up with guys like Captain Lou and Fred Blassie and The Wizard, because they were so well respected by the McMahons and they knew they couldn't get fired, like if Vince Jr. was doing the interview, Fred Blassie or Captain Lou would just say the most awful things about Vince Jr. on camera, and it wouldn't matter, you know. But it kind of, they knew what they could get away with, and they could, it seemed like they could get away with a lot because it helped their character a lot more as well, you know.
Yeah, Vince was very smart. about that. You could get away with anything. He knew. He's just a smart guy. I mean, you got to give him tremendous credit. You know, very, very smart guy. So it was a good run. I was up there almost a year, Paul, but it was really a great run. Yeah, so, and before that, there was Australia. So I've been pretty fortunate, pretty fortunate. But I will say this to you, okay?
Yes.
I've got something. I can't divulge it, but I have something very, very significant that I will be announcing relatively soon. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's going to make an awful lot of noise, global noise. It's going to make a lot of noise. So when the time is right, maybe I come back on your show and we can talk a little bit about it, you know. And that's, of course, that's if you, after this is over, you go ahead and PayPal me that. How much was it? $7,000, isn't that what we talked about?
It was about seven grand, yeah. Checks in the mail, you know.
Okay, all righty. But anyway, I got a cool thing. It's really ultra cool, and it's going to make a lot of noise, man. It's going to make a lot of noise. I'm excited about it. I just can't. I'm under gag order, you know, so I can't.
If you say it, I believe it, that it's going to make a lot of noise. And you have your current podcast. Link will be below my show. I'm under no false impressions. I know many more people listen to your podcast than listen to mine, so I appreciate that you've taken time to come on and talk about the game, Retromania from RetroSoft Studios. Again, link below the show for everyone to check it out. I love it because as a child of the 90s and as the creator of the game is kind of a child of the late 80s, early 90s, I love those old style video games. And the fact that you're going to be on it isn't, and we've seen some of the artwork as well, and it looks great. I'm very, very excited about it. So, is there anything that you would, because we're going the hour Broadway here, and I've kept you far longer than you said that you'll stay, which I'm very appreciative of. Is there anything that you would like to plug? Anything that you would like to say to your fans? And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, and for those who, the easiest way to get updates on the Retromania Wrestling game, just go to their website. It's retromaniawrestling.com. You'll see the whole deal there, the whole menu, and also the updates. For me personally, probably the best way to get any information about me, other than calling the authorities, is... They've got my rap sheet. Oh my God! What's this guy doing out on the street? my website, AustinIdolLive.com. You Google Austin Idol, you'll see my official website. I've got some cool stuff there. I mean, it's pretty cool stuff. And of course, my merchandise is up there. My store is up there. And then something I just started, which I was a little bit reluctant to do it. But it's pretty cool. And Bill Dundee, I'll give Billy credit for it, he put me onto it. It's a celebrity video.
Yes.
You saw it, right?
Yeah, I know that a lot of guys do them. I haven't seen yours, but that's really exciting that you do yours. So I'm going to get you as a birthday present for a friend, I think.
It's cool. You know, I think that's the guys that came up with that idea, I mean, that's really creative. And I know they have a lot of people on that thing, not just wrestlers, of course, all kinds of people. Mm-hmm. But, I've done quite a few already. And people are nice. I mean, nice people, not a bunch of jerks. I mean, they're nice people. Give a shout out to my wife and girlfriend, whatever, or whoever. The son graduated from school, so they mean well, you know. But anyway, it's on my homepage on AustinIdolLive.com. So pretty cool stuff, Paul. Really.
Wonderful. All links she'll be given. There were some questions. Questions about ring rats and things like that. But maybe we'll leave that for an X-rated edition of the show. And
we'll do it again.
Yeah, whatever you can tell me legally about some of the things that you used to get up to in the 70s and 80s. So I'm sure there's some wild stories to tell.
Oh, man.
Yeah, put the kids to bed for that one. But and I don't want to ruin any relationships that you may have at the moment as well, so you know.
I don't have any, they're all ruined. All the bridges have been burnt down. I mean, you can't repair them, can't rebuild them. It's over. Yeah, it's all over. I just float around by myself. Still got some friends, man. Still got some friends, and you're my new friend, Paul.
I really, really appreciate it. Right, okay, well, thank you very much, Austin, and we will talk again very soon.
Absolutely, look forward to it.
Austin Idol, what a guy. I wish he was my next-door neighbour. The parties would be fucking insane, I'm sure. So, yes, Retromania from RetroSoft Studios will be launched early next year on various platforms. It's the natural successor to WrestleFest. I mean, if you're not sold on that already, then, you know, I don't know what I can do. Actually, I'll tell you what I can do. I can tell you some of the names on the game. Road Warrior Animal, Road Warrior Hawk. Now, they were the bosses on the original WrestleFest, so it's a natural fit that they should be on Retromania. Of course, Austin Idol, the BWO, Tommy Dreamer, Colt Cabana, Zack Sabre Jr., and more. So there's something for everyone on that game. And like I say, it'll be available on various platforms. Check out RetroSoft Studios, social medias, and get behind it because it's going to be something really special. Coming this Friday, on Hands Off the Merchandise, is Chris DePetrillo of Figures Toy Company. Now, he is one of the heads of Figures Toy Company, and certainly the head of the wrestling figure line in terms of development, in terms of making deals with the wrestlers, etc. So we have an extensively nerdy chat about the history of his role with the company and the company in general. We, you know, obviously talk about being fans of the various figure lines that there has been. We go massively into Jax, their connection with Figures Toy Company and the Classic Superstars line. There is some controversy. You know, we're not a shit-digging expedition, but we love it when there's a bit of controversy. Controversy on Turnchuckle and Hands Off the Merchandise. And it's the perfect companion to the Eric Arana interview of Boss Fight Studios, because we go in completely different directions, and we like to think between both shows we, you know, very much cover the gamut of wrestling figure talk. Next Monday on Turnchuckle, our guest will be Colby Carino. Now, you may know him as the son of ECW legend Steve Carino, but he is very much blazing a trail in his own right, and if you haven't seen him wrestle yet, you definitely should check him out, because he is amazing, and he will be something very big before too long, I am sure. So we chat about various aspects of his career. We have a lot of fun. It does get very silly as well, so you know, it wouldn't be Turnchuckle if we didn't get a bit silly here and there. And it's a fun interview, and something a bit different from the guests that we've had so far. And we're gonna be interviewing a lot more well-known top independent stars as well, which I'm very much looking forward to. So yes, on behalf of me and Foxy, who is not here tonight, we will see you next week. Goodbye.
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 Goodbye.